Welcome to Societal Shapers, a podcast by PL Cadilla, the place to get inspired, find your purpose and courage, and get tools to become the next female leader, creating real results and meaningful changes.
Hi, it's PL. Welcome to another episode of the Societal Shapers podcast, the place to be to learn more about leadership and sustainability. So if you would like to know more about the podcast, feel free to come and visit the website or Podbean or even Spotify. So today with me, I have a young inspired mind called Nozawana Hazabidi, and we'll be sharing more about her experiences. So Zawana, tell me a bit more about your personal background, family, and how you ended up studying biosciences, particularly in the area of virology.
Yeah. Hi, PL. Thank you for having me here. I'm really nervous and excited to be here. I'm very honored. So to start off, I was born in KL, but at the age of three, my father had to transfer his work. So we actually moved as a family to Los Angeles. We stayed there for about 5 years, and then we came back. We came back to Malaysia. I went into local schools. And then at the age of 16, my dad got another offer. So we moved to Osaka, Japan, and then we stayed there for about 4 years. I completed my high school and my pre-U qualifications there. And then I came back to Malaysia, did my bachelor's degree in medical biosciences and biotechnology in Monash, Malaysia. So that was about 4 years. And then I continued with my honors degree, and now I'm in my PhD program. I'm in my final year in virology. So my interest in virology was, I guess it mainly revolves around my family. So a lot of my relatives, they were raised as doctors. You know, the parents were a doctor, the cousins became a doctor. And then, you know, seeing my grandfather get ill and, you know, having some relatives that were sick, it made me question like why or how. So that made me interested in public health in general, as well as infectious diseases.
That's a really interesting background you have there. So do you speak any Japanese?
We did learn it, but unfortunately I haven't been having people that I can practice with, so it is losing, it's getting rusty.
do you not watch like Japanese dramas, like, you know, the Korean series?
Do they have they do, but I'm not a big fan of it. I'm okay with talking in Japanese. Sometimes I text some of my friends, but it's very low-key and not as fluent as I would like it to be.
Oh, that's lovely. But still, you know, the fact that you've managed to get all this exposure while growing up, that's really, really amazing.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit more about, you know, how have these experiences shaped your outlook of life?
It's definitely, I get the, it's not necessarily a third culture vibe. I definitely feel Malaysian at heart, but it's, I get the experience of being in an international community and seeing how they think, and then seeing how the people here think, and taking the good and, you know, just eliminating the bad, but basically just keeping in note all the strengths that all of these countries that I've been raised in. So in America, it was a local school that I attended. So I saw like how they raised, you know, young students to think for themselves. And then in Japan, it was an international school. So all of those, you know, different cultures coming together and understanding each other. So that it definitely helped me understand. It helped me open up more to people's perspectives rather than just sticking to my own.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So there was one part which you mentioned, which is, you know, you're Malaysian at heart, despite traveling abroad.
Yeah.
You know, experiencing these different countries. So where does that Malaysian at heart come from? Do you reckon it's, you know, from the environment, from your parents, or was it, did it come after when you actually came back to Malaysia?
I think it came back, it came back after, okay, when in Japan, and then I was doing my pre-U qualification, so we were looking at potential universities to go to, and then I kind of thought to myself, look, I haven't been in Malaysia for quite a long time, and I think it's time to get to know what my people are like. And then that's when I came back. Thankfully, you know, my parents have, like throughout once in a while, even when in Japan, we would make sure that, you know, our culture was being conveyed to other people. So even when it came to expression of art, I made sure like to show the traditional dance and whatnot. So it's the beauty of the culture, which I really like. And I don't think I want it to just be, you know, thrown away like that.
Yeah. So I love that. You know, I love that you still have that, you know, Malaysian by origin, you know, and importing you know, other culture into your own perspectives, and then exporting, you know, the Malaysian culture and heritage. So when did you start realizing your passion for education, and why education?
So it was somewhere around my third year of bachelor's degree. We were sitting in a lecture hall, and then I got called out by a lecturer, you know, and I thought I was in trouble, so I started panicking. But actually, she called us out, and she was like, so, hey, School of Science, we have this new program, and it's called PASS, which stands for Peer Assisted Study Sessions, and we're looking for volunteers to help guide these sessions. So basically, these sessions they're not the conventional tutorial where the tutor is sitting in front, and then is standing in front, and the students are sitting at the back and just listening. It's not passive teaching. I got the opportunity to run the classes on my own, design it. We had group discussions, we had games, we had station games, we had flashcards. And then I picked up, I recalled like how I learned back in America, and it was a lot of positive reinforcement. So I put that in my classes, and I saw how positive it was, and seeing how other lecturers as well, you know, guide their classes with different teaching methodologies to keep students engaged, despite, you know, what you teach might be perceived as boring or, you know, uninteresting. It's the key of how you design your teaching classes, which I think is very, I guess I would say, inspiring and what led me.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Mm-hmm. Seeing the different syllabuses of how teachers teach in America and how teachers teach in Japan and Malaysia, like it was very enlightening to see how your teaching method can actually affect how a student wants to even learn.
So this is the interesting part, right? Because you did not go through the primary and secondary system in Malaysia, is that correct?
I did UPSR, I did PMR. But I did not do SPM.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you experienced a bit of primary when you were in the US. You did a bit, you know, some parts of your primary in the US, some parts of your secondary in Japan. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so you actually experienced both systems then.
Yeah.
So what is your thought on the different teaching methodologies between the two during primary and during secondary, if you still remember, but I'm sure you do because you're still young, right?
Yeah. During primary, it's a lot of So I actually got the experience. I have a story from my older brother when he came back. So if we start off with Malaysia first, you know, it was just a simple activity of coloring. So my older brother, he was coloring in a frog and he was coloring it in red. And he actually got scolded by the teacher. And she was like, no, it's not supposed to be red. It's supposed to be green. So it was that really strict mentality that it has to be like this. Whereas in America, it was a lot of nurturing young minds. What do you think? How do you feel about it? It was a lot more. You are allowed to speak up about how you feel. Of course, there was discipline. Like when you show positive behavior, they would put like stars on the wall beside your name, so you know that you're doing well. And the basic skills that they teach you, I was actually fortunate enough, which I actually don't see in Malaysian schools nowadays. I realized that most of my friends don't know how to swim. And that was something that was an important key skill that was implemented in overseas. Other things, basic skills that we learned was learning American Sign Language, which I feel, you know, like it includes a wholesome content of your contribution to the society instead of just you and learning yourself.
Yeah. That's very true. And I think, you know, because having a pool in a school area is in a way luxurious, and size is difficult, right? But even the accessibility to public pools, for example, is not even convenient. There's nothing that's so close by to the schools in order to get the students to go and practice how to swim. And you're right, this is a life that should be part of a curriculum, and that there should be more outdoor activities to get involved in. And I love this because, you know, up to today, after, you know, almost 60 years of independence, and it still seems that, you know, our education system currently is lacking in a lot of different areas, right? So the example that you shared is interesting, and interestingly enough, I've actually heard, you know, many, many testimonials to that, which is how teachers teach you in a one way or narrow-minded way of teaching, rather than nurturing, you know, your own ability to decide on what you feel, what you think at that moment. And freedom of expression is something which is quite limited here. And, and you know, being exposed to the different curriculums and to the different teachings in different countries is something which I feel a lot more of younger people should hear. And they should question, and not just question, but they should also put this across, you know. So for example, if someone who is in secondary school or at university or public university has listened to this podcast, they should really try and propose some of these teaching methodologies into their students, right? And propose it to their lectures to see how can we engage students in different ways and to embed certain, you know, methodologies from abroad to make it even a more enriching, engaging study system. Yes. I felt that even during my time, it was, you know, but luckily enough at that time, that we were not the gadget generation, right? So we didn't have all the distraction. So we had a lot more of time to play outdoors. So I think that was the one time or thing which allowed us to build our critical thinking skills. Because then you're able to, you know, think of ways on how can I play outdoors? How can I extend my time to play with my friends? And you think about all these creative ways to give reasons to your teachers or to your, although you drove them up the wall, but, you know, because you wanted to really, you know, you just had to be creative. You know, now everything is so dormitory. You're just like within walls and you're confined within spaces. You don't do much. I don't know how much of that actually... you know, pushes people to certain limits. And that's why when we're facing this crisis, you know, people's limitations are, you know, not maximized. Yeah. And therefore, when faced with hardship, then you really see the true strength of a person's character and personality, right? Whether they can take pressures of the external challenges. So moving on to, you know, what gaps or social injustices that you've heard, witnessed, that have probably driven you to champion education and women empowerment?
Okay, so in terms of education, it goes back to you having to fit into a box. And so what that does is it gets rid of your creativity, and it puts you down for bringing out original ideas. You know, it prevents people from asking questions. And
so have you seen this? Have you experienced this?
Well, what I've seen is from, you know, for my brothers who have been studying.
Older or younger?
I have one older brother, so that was the one that had issues with coloring a frog. And then I have two younger brothers. So the youngest brother, he's 17 years old right now. But I would say that their education system is much better in terms of they're now instilling the love for STEM fields. So all the science, mathematics and all the science streams. So they have like robotic club, you know, that was something that I
never
got
exposed to. And this is local public school?
This is a local boarding school. So that is where, you know, you question, okay, how about local public schools? Do they get this exposure as well? So just the idea that you have to fit into a box is what really bothers me, because I feel like everybody has their own gifts that they can bring to the table. So why don't you find that out and you know, polish it so that, you know, they can fulfill their own contribution.
So you speak very well, and you know, you can see that you're very outspoken in terms of your own thoughts and opinions, right? Do you feel that a majority of your peers, who are women in particular, also share the same sentiment, or you feel that there's some differences?
So in Monash, I tend to mix around with different kinds of people from different cultures and countries, because that's where I feel like I do blend in. I like the idea of sharing cultures. I like the idea of, I want to know what it's like in your country. You know, oh, that's interesting, because we don't have that, you know, and you see, like, you know, just because it's not practiced in our country, it doesn't mean that it's bad, you know, and I think that it's really cool to learn, you know, new and different things. So I always make sure that whatever, wherever I go to, it's an environment where I can blend in with different kinds of people. It wasn't an active encouragement by my parents, but I think it's just putting me, having been in an environment where it was different kinds of people around me, that I was exposed to it. So that is what led me to,
Tell me more about you being part of this Women's Empowerment Network, or WEN, W-E-N.
Yes. So this was a committee that was established by Monash 2 years back. So Monash actually started celebrating International Women's Day 3 years ago, but I was not a part of the first one. And it wasn't actually...
What happened before that? Did they only decide there was a Women's Day 3 years ago?
I think it was just within staff. And then it wasn't until I was actually originally a part of the postgraduate community. Mm-hmm. And I managed to sit in meetings on gender equity task force. So towards the end of the year, they were like, hey, we want to bring out this network. Would you like to be a part of it? So I grabbed the opportunity, and it was a voice of the postgraduate students because I was the only member from the student community. And I was a part of celebrating International Women's Day last year. So we brought up the whole staff and students together. And then starting this year, unfortunately, because of coronavirus, we didn't manage to celebrate it on as massively as we did last year.
What are some of the objectives of this network?
So it's mainly about creating a safe space for women, training yourself, coaching on, life skills in terms of career growth, as well as just building yourself as a woman. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you're a mother or whether you are just, a working woman, as well as, being a student, getting exposed to these kind of things does help you prepare for the future.
I think that's a brilliant goal and support that's been created. So that's amazing. And within, so you're currently at Monash, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And you're in PhD, yeah. So do they have any, because this is going to lead into my next question, right? Do they have, public degrees or studies on public policy or certain studies that would allow someone to be part of the public sector space?
So in Monash, there's only a few schools. There's School of Business and School of Arts and Social Sciences. So I would say that these two schools do have subjects that are on gender equality, as well as the issues that you mentioned. I cannot really speak for myself because I'm not from those schools, but there is awareness being raised on these subjects.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Because then, from a personal feel, right? Because obviously you're not part of this of the system. So just watching the politics in Malaysia, observing our current government, etc. Do you feel that our current political system and public sector space lacks female participation and particularly women leaders?
Yes, most definitely. Especially with the comment that was thrown by the ministry when the lockdown began, and it blown up on CNN. That was very embarrassing. The representation of women in the ministries itself is very little, and I would have hoped to see more. And also women more in the upper ranking positions, because we do have something to bring to the table. And right now, it's the mindset is still sticking to the old standards that a woman should be like this and a woman should be like that. And if she doesn't, then she has failed as a woman. I do think that it is getting better because smaller communities are stepping up. On International Women's Day this year, there was actually a march in KL outside of Sogo Mall. So I think the awareness is there, but it will take time for us to see it becoming where we want it to be.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring you back to what you mentioned, right? So the perception of women, especially in this country, is still like you have to fit a certain mold, right?
Yeah, yes.
And so do you, as a young Muslim Malay woman, feel that pressure either, from your own direct family members or even externally, right?
Yes. There is, if I were to share my personal experience, I have gotten comments from people about how I should not be taking too long on my studies because otherwise I'm not going to get married. I've also gotten comments on, because they were asking me whether I was doing a master's or a PhD and how long it was going to take. And then they said, you know, why are you using your time on this? You might as well just get married. So, you know, this was coming from men and women. So
and close friends slash family members.
It was from family members, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. From friends, I would say not so much. Maybe there is a certain standard of how a woman should behave and how a woman should look like. You know. So
how does that? How does it make you feel?
It's sad. It's really sad because I feel like, am I not allowed to express myself? Because I am trying to be me, and if you're trying to stop that, then who am I supposed to be? Mm-hmm. You know, there's the idea of if you want to be outspoken, then you need to dress like someone who's outspoken, or you know, like other kind of perceptions like that. If you're surrounded by the wrong kind of people, it does throw your self-esteem off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being in, you know, now that I'm, you know, getting ready to launch into a career, I am starting to feel, you know, that importance of being surrounded by people who do build you up rather than people who put you down.
Yeah. And it's interesting how, you know, those pressure don't just equate or put people in a mold, right? But they actually tie your success as a woman with whether or not you get married now or later, right? So if you get married now, it's a form of success. That means, okay, you know, you've achieved, this is a milestone in your life, and therefore we're happy for you. You can do whatever you want afterwards.
Yeah.
Which is wrong already, right? As an expectation of success, that is a wrong expectation. Yeah. So I think it's important that we talk about this like openly and honestly.
Yeah.
And so you seem to have a very positive, optimistic personality, which is great. And so earlier I asked, you know, how does this make you feel? So I think the other question to that is, how do you overcome these challenges, right? So you get this and sometimes it does maybe knock you back a little bit.
Yeah.
So how do you back up and how do you convince yourself otherwise?
I think just you know, it sounds easy, but it's not that easy to do. But you know, finding yourself and, you know, finding what your purpose is. Why am I here? What do I believe in? What are my principles? So finding that, and then also finding people who support you in that, or people who share the same ambitions and dreams, is really important. Because otherwise you're just gonna stay alone in that, you know, little box, and no one's ever going to find out, you know, what you are and what you can give.
Yeah. I love that because it just goes to validate, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm in a position where I'm coaching and helping women empowerment within the public sector space, right?
Yeah.
So one of the main things which I help these women do is to find purpose and clarity. And I'm so glad that you said, you know, one of the ways that you have overcome these challenges is because you know your value. You understand, you know, the principles that you have, and you know your purpose. And so, you know, these things that comes and knocks you is something which you can easily just block it away because you're very aligned with yourself. I think that's a really important part that's coming up in this discussion. So I think moving on, what are the areas of, you know, you and probably your peers would seek for further support and help in from a personal development perspective?
What has recently come up about, because, you know, I sit in meetings and, you know, I talk with my friends in the office, is a lot about polishing your communication skills. So the question of how do you convey a message effectively, because, you know, I don't deny that women are driven by emotions and, you know, it's not a bad thing. When you approach it nicely, it is, you know, you can help people open up. So how do you communicate, you know, your ideas to people without sounding overly emotional or without people perceiving it as, you know, you're just a woman, that's why. So I think it's a lot of, communication skills and not shying away from telling how you feel. Because I have, you know, friends who do have anxiety, and it's a lot of to do with, you know, even when we're sitting in a meeting, like they will, you know, brush their shoulder against me. Can you say this for me? Can you ask this? Do you think they can talk about this? I'm like, say it. You know, why don't you say it? You know, so just, you know, building that confidence, I think, is very important, as well as personal branding.
Yeah.
You know, how do you become your own PR to people? That is something that I often ask myself.
Love that. So I, you know, just going back to the example that you gave earlier, right? So people would actually kind of nudge you to ask questions on behalf of them. So I get that a lot as well. You know,
yeah.
So we have a discussion, somebody will tell me like, you ask that, like, you should bring that up and you should do this. And and why do you think that that's, why is that so? Why do other women look up to you and not want to speak up for themselves?
I think it says a lot about, I guess just the fear of getting your ideas thrown down, and it goes back to education. So, you know, we look back at our school system where if you say an idea that's out of the blue, you're going to get thrown down. You're not going to be hurt. So I think just that element has, you know, solidified in your way of thinking that when you do grow up, it's still there. So it's something to unlearn. It has nothing, you know, ideas, good or bad, you know, just throw it out. Because it gives different perspectives. Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with saying anything.
Yeah, I like that, because it's something which is embedded within the school system, or even like, you know, it happens more, it's more prevalent amongst peers. Like whenever you try to share your thoughts or opinions, you know, people feel that you're trying to show off instead.
Yes, yes.
English, then, you know, rather than Bahasa, people think you're a bit arrogant compared to them. And so they start, you know, to tease you, or they bully you. And that, you know, it plays a huge role in your psyche, right? Because people are typically being faulted or penalized for not asking the right questions.
Yeah.
But what are the right questions, right? So then we become, or we've formed a culture in our society whereby the art of asking questions, and this is going back to communication skills. Mm. You want to communicate and articulate your messages well. You also need to be open and prepared that not everything that comes out of your mouth is perfection.
So
how do you then, you know, how do we overcome this from an education perspective, from a societal perspective, from, you know, within our peers? So if you have friends who actually fault you or try to put you down for things, how do you then say to them that that wasn't really a nice thing to say?
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's also lacking.
Yes.
Right? So I like what you said about when a friend rushes you to get you to ask a question on behalf of them, instead of, you know, doing it for them, you say, why don't you do it? Right? But in an encouraging and positive way, they will feel supported and therefore would want to ask that question themselves.
Yeah.
I think that's really, 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 really amazing. And, you know, for your age, I think you have a very high level of maturity. And where would you think, you know, this level of maturity comes from?
Oh, wow. I would definitely like to give my big thanks to my family. I think my parents play a huge role in just letting me be who I be. Of course, I do get scolded once in a while, but only when it comes to, you know, being rebellious and doing dangerous things. But apart from that, you know, my parents have never put me down for my ambitions. You know, they do give their advice, but it has come to a point where I am allowed to make my own decisions. The issue of whether a woman chooses to be a working mom or a stay-at-home mom, I didn't know that it was such a big issue. So, you know, seeing my mom, she chose to be a housewife.
When you said a big issue from whose perspective?
From women in, like,
in general?
I did not know, that it was a judgment. It was a judgment that was made. So, you know, it made me feel guilty for my mom, because my mom's a housewife and I'm out here, you know, networking. And I do, I've sat down with my mom and I'm like, Mom, do you ever regret like quitting your job and taking care of us? Because it's a big deal. And she says no. And she says that she doesn't regret it. She's happy. So I think, you know, my mom plays a huge role in helping me believe in myself when I didn't.
We've hit the mark really well.
Yes.
Thank you so much for sharing your
personal
experiences, background. You know, it's amazing to see you know, a young female Malaysian who is able to speak so eloquently, you know, so much maturity, and I think, you know, something which a lot of other women can take inspiration from. So, you know, continue to shine. And I hope to see you become a very successful virologist. And also at the same time, build a network of other female leaders in whatever path that they want to become. But yeah, if they're gonna, if they want to be involved in the public sector, send them over to me. Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me, PL. It was a great pleasure to see
Likewise.
You.
Yes. Thank you so much for tuning into Societal Shapers, everyone. This is Awana Zavidi. Hope you have a great day. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you liked it, give it a thumbs up, subscribe, leave a comment, and share with your friends. Be sure to tune in to the next episode, and to find out how to be part of Societal Shapers, head to www.plcadilla.com and check out our coaching programs. Catch you soon!